Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Recorded in 1993, RAND members Graham Fuller, senior political scientist, and Ian Lesser of the International Policy Department discuss how the collapse of the Soviet Union offers the opportunity for Turkey to redefine its role as a military presence and to expand its influence on world affairs. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and don't forget to subscribe to the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
Well, Ian, I think it's been very interesting. I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who have read parts of our Turkish study, and I think one of the questions I get most often is why are we doing this study on Turkey right now? I think to me that's one of the most interesting questions of all is why Turkey. My basic answer to people is that I think Turkey is really the state, one of the states in the world that has been more profoundly affected, perhaps by changes in the collapse of the Soviet Union and the new world order we're in. But I think you would agree that's just the beginnings of an answer as to why we should be interested in Turkey, especially in right now.
Oh, Graham, I think that's absolutely right. You know, one of the ways that I think about it from my own perspective, coming at it from a European security angle, was we used to think of Turkey strictly in terms of NATO, strictly in terms of a very narrow conception of what it meant for us in Europe and within the Atlantic Alliance, and even within a subset of the Atlantic Alliance that was more Southern European than anything else. But now the whole game has changed, and the new geopolitics of Turkey are such that this is a country whose importance, and I think you'll agree, really stretches all the way from Yugoslavia to Western China.
That's right.
A very different world.
Or even from Gibraltar to China, as it were, if you consider Turkey as a Mediterranean power. But, you know, I think it's interesting to make the contrast. What really was the role of Turkey in the old NATO structure? I mean, Turkey was sitting there on the edge of the Soviet Union. I think it's interesting, for example, to note that Turkey and the Soviet Union came into existence simultaneously. So certainly Turkey's vision of the world was highly constrained by that presence of this huge Soviet colossus to the north, which meant that Turkey couldn't mess with the Caucasus, couldn't mess with Central Asia or any of these other things. That's changed. But how do you see it in Western terms? How do you see Turkey's role viewed or envisioned by NATO?
Well, I mean, there is a long history that goes way back before the Cold War that has to do with European perceptions of the Ottoman Empire and so on, and maybe we can get into that in a little bit. But I think one of the interesting things is to say, just to observe, that in many ways the Cold War started in the part of the world where Turkey is. It started with things like the Truman Doctrine. It started with Greece and Turkey. It started with what people used to talk about as the Northern Tier. And that was at the beginning of that epoch. As it evolved, though, I think we came to see Turkey very much in terms of its importance defending Europe against in the containment of Soviet power, its importance in the containment of Soviet power for European security ends. And you know, the revolution really came, I think, finally with the Gulf War, where all of a sudden people woke up and said, really, really, you know, Turkey's importance is no longer just in European terms or even especially, but in the Middle East. And now, of course, with the breakup of the Soviet Union, and this is much more your area than mine, with the whole opening in Central Asia.
So, but really, in the earlier stages, wouldn't you say that, in fact, the Turkish role was pretty modest? I mean, the only real military role would be if the Russians, if the Soviets had decided to invade Iran or Turkey via the Caucasus, or in theory you could have had Turkey helping out to defend the Balkans or defend Greece anyway against an attack from the East European allies of the Soviet Union. But that really was pretty modest. And my sense of a Turkey in those days was a country that was fairly cautious in its view of the world and knew its place. It was somewhat introspective, isolationist perhaps even, and did not want to get involved in problems outside its own region. I think that it's the beginnings of change here that is so astonishing in the new Turkey.
No, I think you're absolutely right, Graham. I mean, in fact, there were very few examples of Turkey doing anything beyond its borders that people will refer to now, with a very great exception of the Korean War. And that has been an important image, I think, in our perceptions about Turkey and Turkey's contribution to the UN forces in Korea and so on, and then their reputation for ferocity. I mean, there was, of course, another factor, which was that for a very long time, Turkey has had the largest standing army in NATO next to the United States. And there was a feeling that this tied down a lot of Soviet divisions and all the rest of it. So Turkey was a kind of force in being that was there on the eastern flank. Of course, also with the Straits, the connection between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, and how you would control that in relation to the containment of Soviet power and so on.
Exactly.
And these are all really all the old considerations that came into play, but all of this has now changed a great deal.
And, that's right.
And I think you can see this, well, two areas we could talk about, the Balkans and Central Asia. How do you see that, Graham, the situation in the Balkans? My own feeling is that Turkey is going to find that very, very difficult to stand aloof from.
Well, I think when I think about Turkey and where it's going in the future, I find it, first of all, awfully useful to look back at really who the Turks are, to start with. What is the character even of this place? The Turks are really very different than other people who live in the Middle East. The Arabs have been there since time immemorial. Persians have been there since time immemorial, or Greeks or other nationalities. And yet the Turks are these very unusual and special people. Here they came out of the northern parts of Siberia, from well beyond the Urals, and this thousand-year gradual march across Central Asia and on through what today is Central Asia and through Iran, through the Caucasus and into present-day Turkey, and as you well know, right on up to the gates of Vienna in the 14th century. So these are not sort of your usual Middle Easterners, and they've never thought of themselves as typical Middle Easterners. I think they've often thought of themselves as a little bit aloof from other states and other structures, and having special interests and special ties and a special role with the West that has often earned them the annoyance of people like the Arabs or the Persians as to why they're there. And I think if we don't take that into consideration, then it's much more difficult to understand why the Turks should suddenly be now playing a very new role once the lid was removed, once the former strictures were removed from their room for maneuver.
Yeah. No, I agree with that absolutely, Graham. In fact, I think it's impossible to understand European attitudes towards Turkey, for example, without reference to that kind of history. Because after all, they were at the gates of Vienna not long ago in the sort of useful scope of European history. Mm-hmm. The competition between the Spanish Empire and the Ottoman Empire, centuries long. These are all things that, if not at the back of the mind of every European, they're certainly in the minds of people who think about Turkey as a policy problem in Europe. And they're certainly, even at a popular level, in the minds of populations on the Balkans and elsewhere who lived, as they would view it, for many centuries under Turkish domination, Turkish occupation, and so on. So I think that history is extremely, extremely important.
Right. And I think also it affects the Turks' own view, because after all, they were the center of one of the last great Islamic empire. The Turkish Ottoman Empire really extended at its heyday, as you know, from just about from Gibraltar to parts of Iran and well down into the Arabian Peninsula. And it was the loss of this empire at the end of World War I that I think gave Turkey a very special new quality, that suddenly it had become the small nationalist state. And now that Turkey's interests are again expanding in different areas, I think there's a touch of nervousness, at least in the old Muslim world, and maybe even in the Balkans. I mean, and of course the Ottoman Empire extended on up into the Balkans and up virtually to Vienna for a long period of time. So yes, there is confidence in a modern Turkey, but there's just this little thought about what old imperial instincts are there. How much do the Turks have an interest in these regions because they were at one point masters of those same peoples and territories?
Yeah. But they do have a keen interest in it, don't they? I mean, my feeling from talking to people in we would define as the Turkish elite, business leaders, people in the government, academics, these sorts of people, when they're sitting in Istanbul or Ankara, they're convinced they're in Europe.
That's right.
And in their experience, certainly, obviously, in the Ataturk years, since the formation of the Republic after the First World War, they have been taught, they have been socialized to think of themselves as Europeans. And certainly for that class of Turk, they are in Europe when they're sitting in Ankara and Istanbul.
That's right.
And in that context, their inability to have Europeans, in their view, take them seriously.
That's right.
Let them into the European community, new defense structures and all that that are forming in Europe. I think they find this very wounding. And there's an interesting question here about whether they will look on these new opportunities in Central Asia, for example, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, as an alternative. Is it an alternative, do you think, or is it just a way of making themselves more important to Europe if it works?
I don't know. That's a very good question. Just I was reminded while you were talking about themselves feeling European. I don't know whether I mentioned to you one time when I was in a small provincial town in Turkey just changing some money, and I was talking with the teller, and I mentioned that I was a middle... he said, what are you doing here in Turkey? And I said, well, I'm a Middle East specialist. I'm here doing research. And he said, what are you doing in Turkey then? there's the conviction that absolutely this is not the Middle East. I think that this is really the critical question for Turkey. Will they have opportunity to play a major role in the new Europe as a member of the European community, or is it instead going to be off to the east in areas that are ethnically linked? It's probably worth noting here. Perhaps many people don't often fully recognize that when you move east from Turkey across into Azerbaijan and then on into Central Asia itself, that you're really talking about a huge belt of Turkic populations. The Azerbaijanis speak dialects mm-hmm. of Turkish, the Uzbeks, the Turkmen, the Kazakhs, the Kyrgyz, and indeed on into China itself, the Uyghur Turks in western China or Xinjiang province. So you've got a very special band of ethnicity, Turkish ethnicity there that the Turks really couldn't have anything to do with as long as the Soviet Empire was in control. Now that suddenly these areas have become independent, I don't know that Turkey has yet decided how much they want to go back moving to their ancient areas where they used to live and have key interests there, or whether they want to continue to look on to the west as they've done for so long in this last century.
Yeah. No, my impression is that among entrepreneurs, and there's a very active entrepreneurial class in Turkey, that they're very keen on exploiting these ties that are linguistic and cultural and so on. It's an open question, though, it seems to me, whether these emerging republics in Central Asia are going to reckon that the best ties, that they want Turkey as an interlocutor. In other words, would you not rather, if you're in Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan, deal directly with London or Paris or Washington or Brussels? Why do you need Turkey as an interlocutor? I think it's really a very open question whether Turkey is going to be wanted to play that role, both culturally, politically, economically. After all, the real resources for development, for investment, are not in Turkey. There are some large ones, but the real ones are in Washington and Brussels. Not at all clear as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Also, there's the question of what the new Central Asian states, the new Turkic states of Central Asia, think of themselves. It's been my experience traveling there that there's still a great deal of confusion among these people. You know, who are we? Are we honorary Soviets? Are we Westerners because we were part of the Soviet Union, which is now part of the West? Mm-hmm. Or are we former Russian colonies? Or are we Muslims? Or are we Turkic, part of what was used to be called Turkestan, Russian Turkestan? Yeah. Or are we actually Turks themselves? Or what? And I don't think they've answered that question in Central Asia themselves yet. At this point, I think the Central Asian states are delighted to know that there is a Turkey, and that Turkey is the leading Turkish state of the world. But at the same time, that they don't want to commit themselves too heavily to any set course. They want to be able to deal, if need be, with China comfortably, with India, with Pakistan, with Iran, and certainly with Turkey. But certainly with Japan or with Washington, with the United States, if they can do it.
Well, it's the Turkish dilemma, in a way. This dilemma is just as palpable in Ankara, really. Are you part of the East? Are you part of the West? Part of the Middle East? Part of Europe? part of the North, part of the South, the Islamic world, the Western world. Mm-hmm. These are dilemmas that are palpable, I think, in Ankara. It's difficult to be. There are a lot of opportunities here, and we've talked about some of them that come from this vast opening in Central Asia for Turkey. But I remain convinced that the real interest has got to be for this Turkish elite, unless they are replaced, and I don't think that's so, with how they will relate to Europe, how they will relate to the United States in the end, and to the extent that people become much more sensitive to relations between the Islamic world and the West, as we're seeing in Bosnia. This dilemma becomes much more difficult for Turks in general, not just the political class and so on, but the public.
Yes,
it's very hard to stand aloof from what's happening in Bosnia.
It is. But Turkish intellectuals, I think, feel special grievance and concern over this problem. They, perhaps more than anyone, are the ones in the Ataturkish tradition of wanting to be very secular, very much part of the West. And historically, they looked at these places, even if they're Turkic republics often in the East, as more primitive, as more backwards, as very heavily under Soviet control, and hence having a slightly different kind of work ethic and culture to them. I think there's a concern and a fear on the part of many intellectuals, anyway, that if they get more involved, say, in the Caucasus or even in Balkan Muslim politics, that somehow their Europeanness is compromised. Mm-hmm. Normal Turkey hasn't really had an Islamic policy. They were grudgingly a member of the Organization of Islamic Countries for quite a number of years, but never thought of themselves as having policies based on Muslim kinship. Mm-hmm. And yet when you talk about protecting the Bosnians from Serbian attack, why else would you really do that except it is a recognition that there is an Islamic commonality? Sure, a shared history in part, mm-hmm. but it's a shared Islamic history. And I see many Turkish intellectuals getting very, very nervous about what this may be doing to their image if they get too involved there or in the Balkans, or excuse me, in Iraq mm-hmm. or in Kurdistan or anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting question as to whether this has much to do with Islam and Islam in Turkey, or whether it's Turkish nationalism and all that that brings with it. I think a few years ago, if we were having this discussion, one of the issues we would talk about right from the very start was what were the prospects for political Islam, what some people would term fundamentalism, fundamentalist Islam, in Turkey. And I think now you would have to answer that the interesting phenomenon is not fundamentalism, it's a bad term, but for sake of a better word, fundamentalist Islam in Turkey, but Turkish nationalism and the whole question of neo-Ottomanism and how this is perceived not only among Turks but outside of Turkey.
That's right.
Because after all, I think that's absolutely critical. There's much more talk about neo-Ottomanism outside of Turkey's borders now than there is in Turkey itself.
That's
no
right.
No question about it.
No, I've always felt that the Islamic threat in Turkey per se has been occasionally exaggerated. Certainly, I think from both of our experiences there's a strong commitment to secularism on the part of most of the country. Sure, they're Muslims and they believe in Islam and it's an important part of their culture. But not in terms of any political commitment. There's really a distaste in many ways for Arab culture and traditional Islamic feelings. So I would be surprised if the Muslim forces in Turkish politics really ever move to a significant place in politics. I think the last few elections have really shown the Islamists have never done better than 12-15% of the vote mm-hmm. on a regular basis. I don't see any reason, unless something terrible happens in the region, why that should change significantly.
No. Well, I agree. I think in considering especially Turkey's relations with Washington, for example, I think this is going to be much more heavily influenced by this outcome of this debate over Turkish nationalism and how active Turkey is now going to be in international mm-hmm. affairs than it will be on due to the influence of Islam within Turkish politics and Turkish society. I mean, there's no question at a surface cultural level, it's not just a surface level, it's fundamental in a way. Turkey gives a much more Islamic image now than it maybe it used to because of the migration of people from the countryside to the cities and so on. But again, to come back to how the political class thinks about the world, I very much agree. It's not the question of Islam so much as this question of re-examining the whole Ataturkist legacy right. about activism and so on. Do you think Turkey is going to become more difficult to deal with in the future? From a from Washington's perspective.
Yeah, I can't see how it can't happen that way. Given Turkey's immense new interests, as you said earlier, ranging now from the Balkans to Western China, Turkey has good reason to want to make its own decisions with much less reference to Washington. After all, these, with the Cold War over, these are no longer areas of critical importance to Washington. Of interest, sure, but not critical importance. And here, I think the Turks may decide, and in fact are already showing signs of beginning to make up their own minds first about what they want to do, and then consult with Washington thereafter. Just one other, I think, interesting thing, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. In a way, Washington's strong interest in Turkey's new role can also maybe push Turkey in uncomfortable new directions in the same region. I've heard people in Central Asia and even Russians sometimes refer to the fact, well, isn't maybe Turkey now playing the U.S. role or fulfilling the U.S. mission? And Arab states and Iran gets very, very nervous about the fact that maybe Turkey's new mission in life is to fulfill the U.S. role in the region. Do you see this as a problem for Turkey to live with?
I think it is a problem for Turkey to live with, but I think the Turks are about as sensitive to this as anyone else. After all, you know, there's a big debate in Turkey now about what kinds of perceived infringements on their sovereignty they ought to tolerate in terms of U.S. access to bases there, security, cooperation, and so on. One of the things that I find very, very interesting in the wake of the recent bombing raids on Iraq, events of a couple of weeks ago, the Turks have had a very ambiguous view of this. Their facilities were used in part for this. They've now come out and said quite explicitly, we are not going to let you do this in the future for the purposes, for the express purposes of conducting air raids against Iraq, unless we see some progress on Western policy towards Bosnia. They say that this is an important sure. enough issue to our public, in Islamic terms, in Turkish cultural terms, that we cannot explain our cooperation with the West on the issue of Iraq unless we see some progress on Bosnia. For me, this is really a very interesting sign that you cannot take Turkey and Turkey's cooperation for granted any longer.
No, I agree. The other area where I think there could be some possible problems with Washington and indeed with West is one of the results of the last Gulf War, when Turkey very quickly fulfilled its side of the bargain by supporting U.S. And the U.S. and Western coalition efforts against Saddam Hussein. We now have this wide open Kurdish problem. 20% of Turkey's population is Kurdish, and historically, as you know, they've been almost denied, their existence has been almost officially denied for a very long time. That's changing now, but if Iraq suffers from a very restive Kurdish population that I'm not even sure the Iraqis will be able to contain, Turkey doesn't face quite that magnitude of problem, but nonetheless, it's a serious ethnic division within the country that's going to require great sensitivity if the Turks are going to get through this. I worry sometimes whether, given Washington's interest in human rights issues and Europe's concern over these things, if the Turks should prove heavy-handed at trying to deal with their Kurdish minority, large Kurdish minority, and doesn't maybe grant them the kind of cultural autonomy and things that they would like to have, couldn't this bring Turkey into real problems with Washington and with Congress?
Sure, I think so. I think it would be on the pattern of what we've already seen, debates in the German Bundestag, for example, about security assistance and other matters. This is really a source of friction.
What did the Bundestag...
Well, there was a cutoff of security assistance for a while, now restored, but this is an ongoing debate in Germany about bilateral relations with Turkey. And of course, there are over a million and a half, Turkish guest workers in Germany, a third of whom are Kurds, actually. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And so the Kurdish movement, as you know, has large ties there. This is, I think, one of the critical questions. I think you've got it exactly right. But I mean, my question to you would be, are we looking, if we look out to the future, will there be an independent Kurdistan in 10 years, say, or even five? What would that mean?
That's really one of the great critical questions, I think, of the future of not just Turkey, but of the region as a whole, and indeed the Arab world. My sense is that in northern Iraq, anyway, given all the depredations of Saddam and the war that has taken place there, unless Iraq becomes a democratic and federal state, I don't see any way that they will be able to maintain their own Kurds within the country, except by sheer brute force, and that can't go on forever. If there's going to be a Kurdish state developing anywhere, it will probably start in northern Iraq. But I don't know that that has to happen in Turkey if the Turks read the warning signals on time and move sensitively. Sure, Turkey, as you know, has a huge insurgency problem with a very nasty separatist terrorist movement that has been pushing for Kurdish rights. But if that problem is solved by military means, as it may be, that doesn't mean that the political problem has gone away. Exactly. And this is where I think there's a very great unknown. And where Iran even is involved, where Iran itself is very nervous because they see Turkey is already growing in power in regions of concern to Iran, interest to Iran, and in which a growing Turkish influence over Iraqi Kurdistan makes the Iranians think that this is yet another Turkish bid for influence in areas right smack on Iran's border. Mm-hmm. And Iran, as you know, of course, has its own very large Kurdish minority.
Yeah. There are enormous risks in this. I mean, wouldn't you agree, for Turkey? If this goes wrong, if these relationships that you're describing in the Middle East go wrong, there are enormous risks. I would also argue that even if it doesn't go wrong, the fact that Turkey is engaged so heavily in Middle Eastern questions and the kinds of things we've been talking about really will eventually change the character of its relations with Europe. I mean, after all, the Turks, especially that political class we've been referring to, likes to keep talking about Turkey as a bridge between East and West and so on. But I have a feeling that if you talk to Europeans, the sense is, I know this is the sense, that Turkey is more likely to be a barrier in many ways, or is viewed in a useful sense as a barrier. At worst, in some quarters in Europe, Turkey is viewed as part of the problem being things like the Kurdish issue, and the problem of minorities and the problem of democracy, despite the fact that Turkey is basically a functioning democracy in the Middle East. I think this is one of the real pitfalls. Sooner or later, this political class, this elite that's so used to having this role in Europe is going to have to face the fact that Europe has a very, very ambiguous view towards them.
That's right. I really think this is sort of at the hub of the whole problem, is that Turkey is just no longer the country that anybody remembered it being before. As we started out earlier mentioning, it was kind of introspective and isolationist, and now it's involved really up to its eyeballs in this huge, huge area, and that has been very attractive to Washington. Indeed, in Central Asia, when James Baker traveled there a year ago, was really telling everyone that Turkey is the model to pursue, because it's democratic, it's secular, it's free enterprise, all of these good things, and that Iran, of course, is a highly negative model that shouldn't be pursued. But in a way, this is putting a lot of weight on Turkey if they're involved in the Balkans. The Albanians look to them, after all, as for some friendly hand. The Bosnian Muslims look to them. Other Turkish Muslims or Turkish minorities or Muslims in the Balkans do. And then you have the whole new Middle East thing with the Turks expressing an interest even in possibly some security role in the Persian Gulf to help keep Iraq in hand. Isn't this really just an utterly different country than we ever had a sense of before?
It is absolutely an utterly different country. And we shouldn't think that because this discussion is ranged across such a vast area that these elements aren't all tied together very well. I mean, if Turkey becomes a more active player in the Middle East and arms itself to do that, you can bet that Greeks and others are going to worry about that. So, you know, I think these things are absolutely bound up together. I think in the end it will put a lot of pressure on the United States. It will put a lot of pressure on the United States because our relationship with Turkey, which I think we've taken for granted, for a long time is going to be very, very different. There's going to be a lot of pressure on it. These concerns for sovereignty and so on are absolutely going to be there. And to the extent that Turkey is less isolationist than it was in the past, I think we are looking actually at a potentially very difficult relationship
with a
potentially much more important player in a whole host of regions.
I think that's exactly it. Just much more important, and with its own interests far more powerfully articulated at home than it ever has been in the past. I think really it's from this point of view that Turkey is so particularly fascinating that I can't think of any other country outside of the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe that has been so tremendously affected geopolitically virtually overnight by the collapse of by changes in the world. And this it will be to grasp the essence of the new Turkey that I think is the primary task of American, indeed European, policymakers in the next decade.
Exactly. It's an example of how we're going to have to start thinking of countries in very different terms and rediscovering things like geography that we'd lost track of.
And ethnicity.
And ethnicity.
And religion.
And religion. And right. All of those good things.
Indeed. Well, it will be interesting to follow.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.